Think about the app you've been wanting to build, sell something you've created, run your community, manage your business, or launch your next idea. Now imagine it's live before today's over. Meet Base 44, the fastest way to turn any idea into a fully functional app. No code, no waiting. Just describe what you want and watch it come together. Backend, design, and all in minutes. A real product ready to share. From idea to live app fast. Start building today at base44.com.
Hello and welcome to the Press Start podcast, Press Start Australia's weekly video game discussion podcast. I'm your host, Ewan, joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, Brody.
Hello.
Shannon.
Hello.
And James.
Hello.
Have I immediately started lagging, and did I come through slowly to you,
Shannon? I thought it might have been me.
I was scared that
you Right, okay. Well, let's persist through it and hope it doesn't happen too much. Today, we're going to be talking about why Xbox closed down some beloved development studios, Square Enix shifting strategies, some changes at PlayStation, the Rogue Prince of Persia getting delayed, and maybe if we have time and get to it as well, the next Assassin's Creed game getting a title. It just suddenly dawned on me that I'm really packed a lot into today's show. But first, James, I saw that you've given Animal Well a go over on your Twitter. You were talking a bit about it. It's a game that's had a really positive reception, but how are you finding it?
Yes. Positive as well, it seems. No, I was, like, kind of shocked just then, speaking to Brody, and I was like, where are you at? And he's like, this point. I'm like, but that's not the first point. And he's like, yes, it is. So obviously, like, it's very non-linear. You can go whichever path you want. Which I didn't really appreciate as much, but now I appreciate it a lot more than I already did. I've only played for like an hour, but it's immaculate. The vibes are there, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know. There's something. There's the art is just like the way it uses like pixely dithering, like and lighting and stuff. I don't think I've seen anything like it in a game visually. So I think it's unique. It's like worth checking out on that front alone, and then the platforming is really solid too. So
Brody and I were just talking about like how optimized the game is. Like it's only 40 meg if that, and you could run it
dots,
on
right?
Like a potato basically. It's nuts.
Yeah, well I'm playing on Switch, so that's good.
is it on Switch? I didn't even know it was.
Yeah, it's on everywhere except Xbox. Yeah, it's interesting,
of course.
Yes, well. But yeah, really good. Pretty amazing considering. I think it's one person, so has made it. I don't know if they've outsourced to other people, but apparently it's one person. So amazing work so far. I'm excited to play more.
Over like 7 years or something, you made it.
Oh really? Yeah, real. That's also like pretty good considering. Like that could have come out and been like dated as fuck or like something. But
good for him.
Yes.
Good for Billy. Billy Besser or whatever his name is.
Okay, we know who they are. So I guess it's not anonymous, right? So yeah. Anyway,
Brody, I know you've also been playing a bit of Animal Well, but I was also eager to ask you about Cryptmaster too, which you submitted a glowing review of. What was it about the game that you loved so much?
I think for me, it was just like super nostalgic. Like I grew up with like those edutainment games of old, like Word Rescue and stuff like that. And I guess I have a penchant for typing games. Like, you know, Typing of the Dead and Westerado and stuff like that. So, I mean, that side of it appealed to me, but it's just like a really cool classic dungeon crawler as well. And it just mashes all that up into like this really stylish and unexpectedly clever game, really. So, yeah, the premise is basically you get awoken, you and three others, so you're a team of four, get awoken by a necromancer in a crypt, and he's basically tasked you with taking his soul stone to the surface and so he can raise hell up on earth again. And yeah, it's just super clever. Like when you're not attacking and fighting enemies and stuff, which is all done through like typing words out, which are they come from a list that is all sort of predetermined that you unlock as you go, and they all have like attack, defense, and there's also like lore stuff that you can unlock. When you're not doing that, it's just like really fun to explore and like solve riddles. Yeah, it's just a really fun, clever word play sort of game that I don't know, just really spoke to me personally, and it's just like a really cool style. Another game that's made by very few people. I think it's only two people in the team. One of which, like, voices the Crypt Master, who himself is... I said it in the review, I think it reminded me a lot of, like, Nightmare, if anyone played that board game growing up, with the Gatekeeper. It's called Atmosphere now, I think. Like, Fear, spelled F-E-A-R. Yeah. When it was in my era, it was called Nightmare. Yeah, so it really reminded me of that. It was like a marriage of that with, like, edutainment games. So it really just felt like it spoke to 90s Brody, which was nice. But, yeah, just a game that's all vibes again. And, yeah, just a really clever premise, I think, that's done well.
How do the words, like, puzzles work? Is it, like, Scrabble or, like, Wordle or something like that?
So it's probably more like Wordle or, I guess, like Hangman even. Okay. So you'll fight enemies and say the enemy's name is Old John or something like that. Mm-hmm. When you like whittle him down and like each attack will do 2 blocks of damage, 1 block of damage, and each damage chips away at his name. When you kill him, all the letters from that name will then sort of disperse among your four characters who are always working on a word at a time. Right. And then at any point in the game, you can sort of guess what the word is that you're currently working on, like Wheel of Fortune almost. And if you guess that word, then it adds another attack or defensive attack to your sort of list of words that you can get. So you're forever like expanding your like lexicon and attack skill just by like encountering enemies in the world and stuff like that. And other ways that you can do that, like throughout the world, there's like chests where... the Crypt Master will like look at the item and then you have to like ask him by like typing look, feel, touch, taste, all that sort of stuff to like he describes the item and you've got to work out what it is. And then similarly those letters sort of disperse down into the thing. So it's all about like, yeah, expanding your vocabulary and available words to be able to like be more diverse in attack and stuff like that. And you might think, yeah, sweet, I'll just get into a rhythm and just like use the same words repeatedly and stuff like that once I work out a good thing, like, because obviously some words buff other characters and stuff like that. It's very synergistic, which is cool. Yeah. But it stops you from doing that by like giving enemies to you that have like a shield that blocks a certain letter or something like that. So for example, Fjord was like an ability I'd use that would like buff the main character's attack by 2, but if there was a shield that had an F on it, I had to sort of change tact and try and go a different way with it. So yeah, it's just all really clever. And yeah, it was just a cool premise, I thought.
Yeah, that is cool. It sounds like a game for a big old nerd like me. I like it.
Think about the app you've been wanting to build. Sell something you've created, run your community, manage your business, or launch your next idea. Now imagine it's live before today's over. Meet Base44, the fastest way to turn any idea into a fully functional app. No code, no waiting, just describe what you want and watch it come together. Backend, design, and all in minutes. A real product ready to share. From idea to live app fast. Start building today at base44.com.
All right, we better crack on with the show because we've got plenty of juicy topics to get stuck into today, including Xbox closing down Arkane Austin, Tango Gameworks, and Alpha Dog Studios. Roundhouse Studios was also absorbed, or will also be absorbed, into ZeniMax Online Studios. They pinned the reasoning for this down to, quote, a reprioritization of development resources to focus on high-impact titles, adding that these changes are not reflective of the creativity and skill of the talented individuals at these teams or the risks they took to try new things. I think kind of there was like just a state of shock that the kind of industry and the community more broadly sort of went into upon seeing this news. I think it surprised a lot of people. But James, what was your initial reaction to hearing this news?
Upset because like I really like Tango. I've always liked their games. Even Arkane Austin, like I adore Prey. I grew much more attached to it after I played the DLC as well. Part of me also like wasn't surprised in that, you know, their games weren't heavy hitters commercially, which like sucks to say, but that's just, they are a business, I guess, at the end of the day. So like it didn't surprise me in that way. But then I was like also surprised because I felt like a big part of the Game Pass strategy was having this wide array of experiences, some say more, I guess, prestige projects than others, so that people are subscribed and have a big variety of things to play at any given time, you know what I mean? Because I feel like reading between the lines here, they are going to be maybe moving more towards focusing on, say, Fallout, COD, Elder Scrolls, like those big games.
Yeah.
Which also understandable, like they are games that cast a wide net. But they also don't come out anywhere near as often as they probably should to keep people subbed to Game Pass regularly. Mm. So, yeah. I'm obviously pretty upset. Like, I loved The Evil Within. I loved Ghostwire. I got to speak to the Ghostwire devs and, like, you know, they were super passionate about what they were doing. And I mean, I know every developer probably is, but you just really felt it with them. But yeah.
Shannon, stop fiddling
with your shit.
My Switch thing just fell off. Just fell off my shelf.
Shannon, I was going to ask you about this. I think James was kind of touching on it there. Maybe you feel the same. But what do you think is kind of Xbox's strategy going forward? You know, what are these high impact titles they want to focus more on?
I don't even know if I can begin to predict Xbox's strategy. There's two parts of it, and I don't want to repeat what James has said, but like, there's obviously the hugely personal side of it. In that these studios created great games, like Prey will always be special to me. Like, it was our first press start campaign, which you and you're a part of. I remember having a really good interview with Rafael Colantonio, which I don't think he was there for 4 or 5 years, but that was a really good interview that I did when that launched. So, like, really great games, but we just, in my opinion, on the business side of it, like, we just don't know enough about the situation. Like, yes, they're acquired, and it, like, obviously Xbox have to take the brunt of it, but like, we don't know what these studios were doing and outputting, and like the financials of it under Bethesda. Like, they could have been ran awfully, and again we don't really know job wise like, you assume that there might be some job loss, but I assume a lot of these people are just going to go into other studios, and it's more about consolidating studios and like having a clear focus among the 20 or whatever studios that Xbox has now. So it's sad when you look at it from the games lost and like the studios lost, but I don't think we have a full enough picture. But in terms of Xbox's strategy, I think it's just that they want to know that every one of their studios is focused and releasing games on a timeline that's not 7, 8, 9 years. Like, we've seen some of these studios that they've had, like Rare and others, like just sort of still supporting games like Sea of Thieves, but I think they would want to be tightening it up. Now that they've acquired Bethesda, Activision, like, they really would want a clear pipeline for every studio with clear direction. So I think it's probably about that. Like, they can't afford to have studios working for 7 years on a game that won't perform, because they're not making money day one with purchases for the most part. So they really have to be sure that every studio is hyper-focused, which sucks, because we're probably going to get less of these games that these studios were known for, and your Ghostwire Tokyos and your Preys that, and Hi-Fi Rush, which I don't think any of them were moving mountains, but they're all good games.
Yeah, I think that's where I struggle a bit with this sort of decision, is that, to your point as well, James, Game Pass kind of benefits from having a wide variety of games on offer there. And you kind of hoped that, you know, your Tango, your Arcane Austin were kind of doing quite sort of different things. And I think in the particular case of Arcane Austin, you know, had Redfall not gone the way that it had and sort of been received the way that it was, like, these could have been really quite neat, sort of quirky games that really complemented the suite of games that were on offer in Game Pass. And, you know, much of the same way that we've lamented PlayStation kind of closing up some of its quirkier studios and, you know, the demise of Media Molecule, that sort of thing. It's kind of sad that you don't get the weird and wonderful sort of things in there. But at the end of the day, if those games aren't contributing to their bottom line, and they're not sort of earning the sort of profit that the business needs, then it's just an unfortunate reality that, you know, to keep people sort of employed in these games being produced, like, you need to turn a profit at the end of the day, which I think a big part of this is sort of been grappling with, like, the corporate element of the industry being at odds with the creative. But there sort of needs to be a balance of the two, as regrettable as that is. Like, I think we all wish there was infinite investment to sort of fund games for the creative sake of it, but that is unfortunately just not the way that it can operate.
The
it
hard...
Just... No, go.
The hard thing with Xbox is, like, everyone has these insane budgets, but, like, you can say definitively, like, we're getting this return based on purchases, where obviously everyone has their own Ubisoft Plus and whatever else, but, like, Xbox, they're not going to know, like, how a game performs with Game Pass. It's never going to be black and white, and then if even if they have some kind of idea, it could take 5 years before they know, like, how many people are still playing. What is this worth?
Yeah, you have to think, unless they're seeing spikes in subscriptions and, like, new players kind of piling in,
and I, that it's not really... And I, my gut says with Starfield that they didn't see that, and I don't think it's... Yeah, the growth isn't happening around these tentpole releases. I'm sure it's going up, but I don't think it's going up and staying like that as the months roll on.
Yeah, I will say again, I've said this on the show before, I'm sure, this was always my concern with Game Pass, though, is that it was going to mean that players aren't spending $60 to $100 a month, whatever the release is that month that they want to play. Instead, they're paying shy of $20 to kind of play as many games as they want in that month. Like, in the same way it's impacted the TV industry or the music industry, like, there's just a smaller pool of money available there that's making its way back to developers that
is there,
they
though?
Need to find because other revenue streams.
It's constantly coming every month now. Like, they've got that money coming in every time. Whereas, say, Sony might get, as an example, a lump sum from The Last of Us every 4 to 6 years. Like, I do, money-wise, I don't know if it is that much less. Like, because even in months where it's like an off month, where there's nothing coming out, like, I still think...
But I think Sony and Nintendo have their PlayStation Plus and online, and, like, Xbox had that before anyway, before they were doing this,
and then they're still getting the kind of $100, $120 purchase price of a new release game.
I still think it sucks because there is no risk taking. I mean, I don't want to be like blanket statements or anything, but it is much harder now for games to take risks because if you fuck up, that's 7 years of time wasted, and millions
and
of
hundreds
dollars.
Of millions of dollars down the drain.
Whereas,
in some cases,
like, you know, PS2 era, I know obviously that was a different time, but, like, there was so much shit, admittedly, but, like, a
license
lot of really,
shit.
A lot of amazing mid tier stuff. That eventually became other games, which was what, like, say, Devil May Cry was, as an example.
Like, my concern is it goes the way of the music industry, right? Where it's, like, just all about tentpole franchises released. There's, like, heaps of aversion to any new debut directors or new IPs, that side of thing. Unless it's an Elder Scrolls game, unless it's a Fallout game, unless it's a Halo, maybe. I don't even know if that carries the cloud it once did, but, like, that's all it's going to be.
On that note, I think we'll be able to have a really good conversation about this when we see Call of Duty and how they reveal that. And, like, is it on Game Pass? What is the strategy there? Because I think that will really set the tone for, like, what they think is the way forward. Like, if that's on Game Pass for Xbox, like, you know that they don't care about the day one purchase. If it's not, then, you know, that obviously does need to factor into their business going forward.
Brody, I'm eager for your thoughts on this topic. How do you rate the communication of these changes? I mean, Xbox has kind of really had the spotlight on them, I feel like, over the last kind of 12 months, for good reason, but for a number of sort of issues, I suppose, they've had to address. Do you still have faith in Xbox? And I guess more specifically, Phil Spencer, he's come under a lot of scrutiny in light of all of this as well, as the sort of leader of things there.
Yeah, I think he obviously shoulders a lot of that because he is the face of Xbox, whereas, you know, other publishers don't necessarily have that almost customer-facing sort of setup. But, yeah, look, they have had a tendency to overshare when they shouldn't, undershare when they probably should. And, yeah, they've had a lot of almost egregious media outings in probably, like, the last year that, you know, they probably could have... They'd be happy to walk back, I'm sure. Like, the Sarah Bond one recently was obviously one that everyone was pointing at. And obviously, you know, it is what it is. But, yes, look, I think while there are the concerns that we have over whether Game Pass will ultimately be viable as a customer, it's still great value for me. Obviously, doing what we do, we can sort of see possibly some writing on the wall that it's maybe not going to be all that great in the long run. But as long as what they're doing is trying to be for the betterment of my enjoyment in playing games, like, I'm going to support that. It's up to them to make the numbers work, I suppose. But, yeah, look, I like Phil. Like, even if he is a good PR spinner, and that's what it is, and that's what I like about him. I don't know. Like, I think he's a... His communication is probably not always the best or the most on point, but he communicates well anyway, and I like that. Yeah, I think it's just a lot of bad things at play. Like, in terms of like this, I don't even think Xbox released a statement about this, wasn't it? It wasn't just the studios themselves, like,
yeah,
putting up their...
I think that, yeah, you're right. Like,
yeah, so I mean,
the only person to talk about it has been, like, Sarah Bond publicly.
Yeah.
And that was, like, obviously... So,
and I think that's on the back of, like, I think Shannon alluded to, like, Game Pass currently is not growing the way they want. I reckon they're getting crunch from Microsoft above to, like, make some cuts and...
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Tango and Arcane had cleared their slate and they were not working on anything actively. They were pitching, and that's all it is. Like, if I were, you know, I think Double Fine are working on something which is probably imminent. Obviously, you got Ninja Theory about to put out Hellblade. I'd be nervous if I was these studios. Yeah, like, you'd have to be. Like, I think everyone would have to be on edge to a degree.
What shocks me is, like, we've said that Game Pass is an opportunity for, like, Forza and Halo and all these games to sort of live for years. But, like, you look at Halo, which is the Xbox franchise, and I feel like Infinite was just, like, plopped out there with the promise of being, like, this hub and this world that's built on it. And I just feel like nothing has happened since that came out. And I don't understand for that game in particular, because it is Xbox's, like, tentpole game, like, and then Game Pass, you've got this service where you want people to keep coming back. Like, there's nothing there for that. And that's where, like, Phil, like, I like him from what I know of him online, and he seems like he's got his head screwed on. But, like, I don't understand how that, something like Halo in particular, can just sit there doing nothing after the launch that had.
I don't know.
And
that
not have any love.
I don't know that that's true. Like, I mean, it is constantly getting updates, but...
The multiplayer is, but, like, campaign, I can't... There hasn't been anything really added to that.
Well, yeah, apparently they were working on campaign DLC, which ended up getting scrapped or something like that. So whether they thought the juice isn't worth the squeeze for, like, single-player stuff in Infinite and they're just back to the drawing board for another single-player game, I don't know.
But I guess my point with that was, like, can we expect another Halo to come out now? Like, where I thought originally, like, Infinite was going to be the Halo for 5 or 10 years that they just keep adding because of Game Pass. Like, I think the strategy, they need to go one way or the other, which I think we will see in the coming months.
Yeah.
Mm.
I will sort of say that, like, maybe some consolidation of their studios isn't, like, the most radical thing in like, comparison to what sort of PlayStation do. Like, if you think about it, kind of PlayStation in terms of their sort of first-party studios, how many is it nowadays? Like, 12 or something? Like, I wouldn't have guessed much.
I'd say 12
more
or 15.
Than that. Yeah. Whereas you sort of have to feel like everything that's kind of under the Xbox stable nowadays with the acquisitions they've made would have greatly outnumbered that. And that maybe in terms of maintaining that sort of routine of, like, a game kind of coming out each quarter or, like, every sort of half year, that's kind of that big sort of, you know, I want to say money earner, but that's... I don't want to say money earner, but I guess that's the sort of term that's coming to mind. But, like, that big sort of release for them. Now, maybe that is the sort of, like, size of studios that it works to sort of manage. Yeah, I don't know. I guess they had an opportunity to kind of come out with more routine than that, more regularity than that. But maybe that's kind of the model that they're looking to emulate, sort of looking at what PlayStation sort of managed to achieve over the last generation.
I think that they're both in not a bad place, but I think they're both realizing they're unsustainable, but in different ways. And I don't know if the right thing for Xbox to do is just try and copy what Sony's doing, because I think we already know internally Sony is concerned with how expensive games are already. So I don't know if that's the right answer either. Like,
I sort of feel like avoiding the expense of a big game is kind of a key part to this. Like, there's always going to be some games that are, like, multi hundreds of millions of dollars to produce. You know, your Spider-Mans of the world, your Grand Theft Autos of the world, that sort of thing. You know, maybe there's a degree of, like, risk aversion with those sort of having the popularity that they do. But, you know, Suicide Squad, for instance, like, it came out recently this week that they had made a $200 million loss on that game. And I think at the time that you were kind of green-lighting the production of that game, you would have thought, this is a surefire win. Like, we are having Rocksteady work on this IP that was that is like a really sort of popular thing, and we're going to have them do it in a genre that is really popular at the moment too. And you know, there's all these success stories working in that space, and that game has totally sort of fallen flat. So I think kind of like, you know, shooting for, you know, maybe like the risk-averse sort of approach isn't actually always that risk-free. You know, maybe there's something to be said about doing what they do in like horror films, and you know, they make a film off a $1 million budget that then turns around kind of $200 million in tickets. Like,
well, is there like a year ago, cost? Blumhouse said they're going to start making games. So,
well, there you go.
Who knows? Let's see if you can make that model work.
To like this, all for all the shit Xbox is getting, I think we can all agree that like, I don't think any publisher knows what to do at the moment. I think we're in such a weird phase where like games are just flopping terribly. Like, nobody has time for anything in a post-COVID world. And I just think everyone is scrambling to work out that like the game needs to be perfect to succeed. Otherwise, gamers just smash it. Like, we've seen with Hellblade.
Yeah.
It just takes one thing and then success goes to absolute failure with the way the internet is. So,
to my point though, like, we started the show about Animal Well and Cryptmaster, and I don't know how like commercially successful those games are proving to be, but you'd have to think that like they have come at a much lower like production cost.
100%.
These other titles.
Animal Well would be
up
there. I think it's fifth on the Steam charts, or maybe even higher now.
Yeah, and like Helldivers is, you know, maybe a step up. Like, the production budget on that, I'm sure, was quite a bit. But that must have made its money back many times over at this point, I would have thought.
I think it's just, everything takes too long. Even sequels on the same engine, take 4 or 5 years. Like, you're just not making that return. We used to make an engine, make a game, then make 3 or 4 others based on what you'd built. And for whatever reason, that's just not the case.
And even your anymore. Naughty Dogs are kind of putting out remasters and stuff to kind of keep the cash flow up between new releases.
Yeah.
All right. Any more to add on this topic, or shall we wrap it up? I'm conscious this is the big one of the day.
Excited for the showcase next month?
Yeah, I'm excited for all the showcases. Like, I feel like we haven't been talking about games for ages, so I'm keen for that.
Yeah, well, on one hand, there's too many games, and also, like, what else
but
is
just,
out?
Like, it doesn't feel positive. Nothing feels positive.
Yeah, some good news would be nice, that's for sure. Look, maybe this could be considered good news, but Square Enix is shifting strategies, revealed at its latest financial report that it will, quote, aggressively pursue a multi-platform strategy that includes Nintendo platforms, PlayStation, Xbox, and PCs for upcoming AAA releases. James, does this kind of seem like a no-brainer in your mind? Does this make total sense to shift up the strategy?
Yeah, I guess. I think all they are doing, in terms of, I think they just really want, they're doing what, I guess, Capcom decided to do 7 years ago, which was like kind of dump exclusivity deals, take like exclusivity money that didn't exclude other markets. So as an example, like Village with VR mode, right? So they get that extra money, but everyone can still play Village who has all the major consoles. I think it makes sense to me. I've got a feeling that obviously 16 and Rebirth have not done as well as they wanted to.
They've said that, I think, now.
Yeah. But then, like, I also think, then I think about, like, what's the alternative, and I thought for a little bit, and I thought, like, obviously releasing them on Xbox isn't really going to do anything, I don't think. I don't think that'd make a dent. But then I also thought about PC. And then, say, you know, Final Fantasy Pixel Remaster, like, that could have been on Xbox as well. And, like, I think that this is good for them, absolutely. I think keeping your games on PS5 only, like, without PC especially, like, it's a little bit, like, naff at this time, you know? Yeah.
I mean, Xbox just having closed their only Japanese studio, I think we'd be pretty receptive to the idea, right?
Of some Final Fantasy obviously. yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I don't think the strategy is to kind of move. I think they've given up on trying to break into Japan, because they've been trying to do it for, like, what, 3 consoles now? It's just not there. When I was there, there was no games in stores. It was just Game Pass ads everywhere.
You see the pictures, right, of, like, the PlayStation and Nintendo sections, and then just, like, the slither of Xbox stuff.
There's just no physical presence there in a market that is still predominantly physical. But, like, I think it's really good for Square Enix. Like, I don't see it as being a bad thing at all. Yeah, I just think, yeah, maybe the remake deal. I think this is also gearing up because it says Nintendo platforms. I feel like this is also gearing up to maybe get FF7 remake on Switch to when that comes, amongst other projects that have kind of skipped. Because I don't think this has anything to do with Xbox. Obviously, projects will come to Xbox. But I think this is definitely about getting more games on Switch and PC day and date.
I don't know if this solves all their problems, though. I think, like, Capcom, I can see why that was big for them, and I think they're doing better than anyone else. But I think we've spoken at length about, like, why the Final Fantasy games might not have done well. So it'll be interesting to see what direction this goes in as well.
Yeah, I feel like maybe changing the naming convention of Final Fantasy games would probably benefit them more. That being said, I think to James's point, like, there is would be a sizable audience on Nintendo platforms and particularly PC that would want to or would prefer to sort of play a Final Fantasy game on that console. So, and not just Final Fantasy, I suppose, but the other kind of Slater games.
Frame Stars.
Yeah, well, okay. Maybe I should revise that statement.
I know that we shit on that, but, like, I do feel like that maybe would have had a bit of an audience on the Switch as well.
Yeah, maybe.
Like,
or it has to be on everything to have a chance, I think.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you with a game like that, you cast a wide net and make it cross-play, and everyone there is a community there, like, everywhere. Although I say that, and Capcom tried to do that with Reverse, and obviously we know how that turned out. I think it's got, like, 10 players right now. But, like,
they're all you.
Yeah, it's me logged in.
And no doubt they've done the math right to, like, try and estimate that, okay, the return on going multi-platform is better than whatever PlayStation players for the exclusives. Sorry, I got a cold. My voice is failing.
Do we think that, like, Final Fantasy 16 and 7 Remake and Rebirth can come to other platforms now, or are we thinking this is for future games?
I can see both. Like, I can see 16 and Remake coming to Xbox and Switch 2 or something. Maybe Xbox on Game Pass, because that will give, you know, some more cash flow to Square from Xbox. But, I think so. I think going both. Because they've got, like, it doesn't... I mean, obviously, it still costs money, but it doesn't cost a lot of money to port a game as opposed to just creating it. Like, you know, they can... I think that it's going to happen. I keep talking to myself. But yeah.
Brody, do you think this is a loss for PlayStation? Would they be a little upset to see this news?
Yeah, I think people were sort of happy having that exclusivity sewn up for Final Fantasy. So I think for to have that go away, I guess that wouldn't be optimal for them. But look, they've got other exclusives they can rely on. So
it doesn't make a difference. You can still play the game on your console.
Well, that's true. But, like, some people might have bought a PlayStation 4 Final Fantasy.
Oh, okay. Well,
and for a good while, like, Final Fantasy was a feature of PlayStation showcases as well. I sort of still feel like they will present a generous pile of money.
To James's point, they might still like, have marketing deals with them and stuff like that. Yeah. But look, I think ultimately this is a win for Square. Obviously, it's other avenues of income, and it's obviously good for the consumer. Like, it's going to be good for, you know, someone like James, who primarily likes Xbox and probably wants to play Rebirth on his Xbox rather than the PlayStation, so...
Oh, no.
Will you replay them again?
Oh, my God, it's too long. I'm sorry. Like, I'm enjoying it, but the pacing and stuff, I cannot play those games again.
We might play Part 3 on his Xbox.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't do that. I've set in stone now for that, so... But yeah. I would play, like, Star Ocean 2 on my Xbox. Like, that's obviously a...
Well, there you go.
Mid-tier release. Yeah. Yeah. Pixel remaster. But yeah.
Well, no, there's plenty of things changing at the moment. And, Square's change of strategy isn't the only thing changing for PlayStation. They appointed a replacement for its former CEO, Jim Ryan, or placements, I should say, promoting both Herman Holst and Hideki Nishino, hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly, to new positions as co-CEOs of separate groups within the PlayStation business. So I think Herman Holst is kind of more... the studio sort of output, and then Hideki is more like the platforms side of things, and has background in that space. Shannon, were you surprised at all in this appointment?
Yes and no. As James mentioned, I think Herman Holst has had a rise from the creator of Killzone to I think he went to, like, just to Horizon, Gorilla, and then obviously PlayStation Studios, and now this role, which seems to just build on that. I don't know enough about the other guy, but it makes sense, I think, and this is like all the issues we've been talking about is you need to have games, you need to have solid services, right? And I think to have someone looking after each of those things, which I think Jim Ryan was a great businessman, but like obviously made a lot of decisions on the gaming side that upset PlayStation audiences, like closing Japan and just making some commentary about games that people like. So I think having someone like Herman that really understands that side of the business, and then someone that can look after the rest of it, should put them in good stead. I think PlayStation Studios has never been stronger. So to stick with Herman is a good call.
Move in light of the Xbox news this weekend, that you kind of, there is this sentiment, I suppose, that this kind of suits are running the show a little bit there. And, you know, maybe that's kind of giving too much credit to Herman Holtz, but at least he does kind of come from like a more like developer-centric background, having kind of come out of a studio and risen up the ranks that way, I suppose. So, you know, I'm not making any
he at least knows, but he knows what it takes to run a studio and make a good new IP and or multiple. So I think that that's equally as important as just like being a good leader, I think.
And Guerrilla's like really gone from strength to strength and like you know, built the Decima engine, right, that now Kojima uses and stuff. So there's a lot of experience there. Look, we don't often have much good news recently of late to discuss, but there was some chatter, some rumors this week that amongst other layoffs, PlayStation looked to have formed a new studio with a number of ex-Deviation staff, with the rumor suggesting that they're working on a new IP. I suppose with that in mind as well, Brody, are you optimistic for the future of PlayStation at this point in time?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think PlayStation would ever have been concerned about their future. Obviously, their strategy currently, I guess, is slightly questionable with the live service approach, but look, at the end of the day, they've got the sales to back it up, they've got the players to back it up, and they've got more than enough IP to lean on to, you know, right the ship, I suppose, if this live service approach doesn't work, which, you know, you could call it 50-50 so far. Like, The Last of Us obviously got canned, but Helldivers has been selling like hotcakes. So, yeah, look, I think PlayStation would be more than fine. Like, I don't know why they'd be worried. They're market leaders for a reason.
All right. Final topic for today. Evil Empire have announced a small delay to the upcoming early access roguelike platformer, The Rogue Prince of Persia, in sterling fashion. I said Kieran's words, not mine, but I do agree. Sterling fashion, admitting that it's largely thanks to release of Hades 2. The new release date's just a couple of weeks later than it was intended to be on May 27th. So a little over 2 weeks as of recording. James, should this be the level of transparency game devs aspire to, do you think?
Sure. I guess.
Do you like just the admission that Hades 2 was going to eat their
lunch? Let's turn this into a rapid fire.
I can't believe I'm missing Assassin's Creed Shadows for this.
Yeah, I agree. Let's do.
All right, I sent you these show notes 2 hours ago. You could have provided
I was in my car. I was driving.
This is not the first time this has happened. I mean, I think whoever...
It's a long trip.
Summerfall
Alone
Studios.
Alone in the Dark.
Or Summerfall Studios, who did Stray Gods. They moved because of Baldur's
Gate. It's happened before. I guess it's cool. I mean, I don't know. And then I'm like, it's 2 weeks. This game, Hades 2 is meant to be huge. Like,
yeah, 2 weeks, that was really my thought.
I just think it's a clever... I think if anything, it's just a cynical James is going to put his cynical hat
marketing
on.
It's good marketing.
Yeah, just good marketing. Everyone's talking about Hades, and then like,
when people Google Hades, the Rogue Prince of Persia is going to show up.
It is the year of Prince of Persia so far. Gunning for a remake reveal next month, but 2 games this year. So
should they be more worried about Hades 2 over the other Prince of Persia game that just came out and flopped terribly? Like, they both present different threats.
Which saddens me so much. But anyhow,
Yeah, I'm keen for this. I think we've said before, like, Dead Cells, I think it'll do well. I think it's going to, assuming it's decent, like, I think it'll come out and it'll have its own audience. And it's early access as well, isn't it? So it's not...
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so it's going to have long legs.
I'm just, like, not interested until it's finished, personally. Like,
Hades feels finished playing it. Like, it doesn't feel like an early access game.
Like, going back to the first topic, though, I feel like early access is kind of a pretty good solution to the struggles around, like, you know, cash flow and game development. Like, you can, in a sort of near sort of finished state, like, you know, once it's kind of crossed that alpha threshold or something, it's like you can put it out in early access, bring in some revenues, you continue to kind of add content to it and polish it up and get it to the finish line.
I think for pubs,
especially like Baldur's Gate, like, look at that.
There's there's a balance. I just think like DayZ is a prime example of early access not panning out. Sorry, anyway. I was talking over you. I missed what you said.
Zinger. You can giggle to yourself during the edit, Ewan.
Okay. All right. Well,
I just said my cash won't flow. Until it's finished. That's all I said.
Let's talk about Assassin's Creed then. Did you want this to be a rapid fire question, or do you want to spend more time on this, James?
I'm very passionate about this topic, so.
Okay. This surprises me, so I do want to hear your opinions now. The next Creed game, previously known as Codename Red, this is the feudal Japan game, has been titled Assassin's Creed Shadows. According to a leak as well, the game looks to be coming out November 15th. So my rapid fire question was going to be, do you like the name? But James, is that a, that's a bigger...
I fucking hate the name. I think it's so bad.
Uninspired.
Like, literally, like you, like
sounds
it's
like
so...
a code name. More than code name Red.
I think Assassin's Creed Red sounded like better.
Assassin's Creed Red sounds like striking. It's like dynamic, mysterious. Like, it's like, there's just so much to it, you know? It's a warm, is it a warm color? I don't know. But like, I...
Shadows, how done?
Every game, any of the games could be called Shadows. Like, it's so boring, in my humble opinion. Like, call it Honor or something. Like, something cool and, like...
Assassin's Creed for Honor. Japan. Like, something Japanese, I feel like.
Call it Assassin's Creed Japan.
Just anything. Like, some Shadow isn't Japanese. I feel like a lot of people aren't going to know this is the game they've been waiting for because of the name
I was speaking to a friend today, and she was like, they should call it Assassin's Creed Sword. And I was like, well, I don't know if that's any better than Shadows, personally. But we just went quiet. But, like, I am...
Look,
I
with
know,
the ideas we're kicking around, let's maybe not criticize Shadows for something.
Nah, but real talk, I think it's a really shit name. I feel like Japan has been such a big, like, request from fans for so long. Like, so long. And now... we have that name. I mean, it's just a name at the end of the day, right? But still. Like, Odyssey, that's such a Greek name, you know?
Yeah,
like, Homer's Odyssey, like...
Yeah.
One of the greatest stories of all time. But, like, I don't know.
Valhalla, anyway. Like, also, I guess. You know, pretty good.
Origins, where it all began.
Origins. Thank you, Shannon. Black Flag, because there's, you know, pirates.
Jolly Rogers.
Let's just explain all of the titles now. But, yeah, yeah, I don't know. I hate the name.
Liberation's pretty good,
but,
I suppose.
Yep, but that's also, powerful single word, not just, like, Shadows. Like, it sounds like a shitty, like, mobile spin-off.
And it's also a bit like, we get it, it's a stealth game.
Or, like, not a novel, like a weird novel that's in between games.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I'm...
That you'd find the young adult section or something. Yeah,
Twilight Shadows. Like, do you know what I mean? 50 Shades of Shadow.
All right, well, I guess I'm going to keep with this rapid fire. Shannon, do you like the name?
I don't hate. Just nothing. All that. For the game that everyone's been waiting for, it's just nothing. I haven't seen it. Maybe there's a reason for it.
Yeah, their
name is Shadow.
Like, it's just very doesn't. James is right. Doesn't inspire anything.
The protagonist.
Then why would it be called Shadows unless there's two of them?
Maybe there's two of them.
I see.
Maybe they're in the Shadow Clan.
The twins,
of, like the samurai or the like.
Yeah. See,
assassin twins.
I just think this year is the year of, like, Shadow the Hedgehog. Like, he gets that name, you know? Like,
maybe he's
Shadow
the protagonist.
Coming out.
It's been his name for decades.
There's a Shadow movie.
Brody, Shadows. I'm assuming it's a nay from you.
Yeah, well, I don't love it. Again, prepared to give it a chance to wow me and justify itself. Like, in the right context, it could still be pretty shit, but passable. So, yeah, look, it's fine. It'll be okay.
Like, I reckon Project Hex is going to be called, like, Twinkle now. Like, I don't have any faith in their naming.
They
should keep the code name. They should not change it.
The code names are good. Red and Hex are really good. Yeah. I don't know.
Hex is definitely good, but they'll fuck that up.
You do have to kind of wonder what it does for, like, kind of SEO and stuff as well, right? Because people have known it for codename Red for so long at this point.
Yep. And have they? Have normies like we have, but...
Yeah, fair. Fair.
Yeah.
Anyhow, that's as close as you're getting to a rapid-fire round for today. It is now time for What the Wiki, the Press Start podcast game show, where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page from an unknown game, and we, the contestants, must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess, with a round ending after a person has bagged themselves 2 points. Last week, that was Shannon, which makes the ladder so far James in first place on 15, myself in second on 13, Shannon in third on 11, so just 2 points separating the pack there. Kieran is just behind Shannon in fourth place on 10 points. Brody, you're on 9, and Harry bringing up the rear on 5 points. But Shannon, you won last week, which means you are today's host. Take it away when you're ready.
Thank you. The game is a rhythm game based around the music and videos of an American singer. It was developed by Metro Creative Graphics.
Oh, Brody.
Yes, Brody.
Britney's Dance Beat.
It is Britney's Dance Beat. I wasn't expecting anyone to know the name of that.
That game was a banger on Game Boy Advance.
What? That's Taylor's favorite game, Shannon, just so you know.
Is it? Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Did
she suggest the games? Is that the thing? No.
I'm so proud I got that.
I knew that everyone would know what it was. I just didn't think anyone would get the name.
I didn't.
There you go.
I had no idea.
The game contains minigames found in an area called Kids Club, which houses 9 different minigames. Computer players may initially... Yes.
Disney Clubhouse, the video game.
No. Computer players may initially be assigned easy, normal, and hard difficulties. The secret hyper difficulty can be unlocked by winning 5 consecutive minigames in Who's the Champion match on hard. There are several minigames that players may compete in. All minigames are played with 4 players, which may be played by any combination of controlled com players. I'm going to need to go back to the wiki for this one. Oh,
you had like half a paragraph.
No, it was that.
It was like, yeah, they're going to get it from the first paragraph, but we're all just like...
Does anyone have any idea of this one? I got nothing.
None.
No. Okay.
There's a bit of a twist to it.
Like, oh.
No.
So excited.
Oh, where do I go? The gameplay modes are play a minigame, minigame champion, one player quiz, and quiz for all. James, I thought you would have this.
Jeez. You've not told us anything.
It's a quiz game.
Is it Buzz?
With minigames.
I will say the minigame component is a very small component of it.
Brody.
James.
Brody.
One versus 100.
No, I'm going to go to the main entry now.
Can I?
Well, James,
you can. Yes, you can. Sorry.
Is it South Park Chef's Love Shack?
No, I wish it was.
Is that a game?
Oh, well. Yeah, it is.
The game is a strategy video game, questionable, developed and published by Nintendo for the Nintendo 64. It was released in Japan in 1999, and it was later released as the first game in the series in Western regions the following year.
Oh, James!
I don't think Ewan's gonna... I don't know.
I probably don't have it.
I only saw James jump out of his chair, but if you thought you heard Ewan... Make it interesting. Go, Ewan.
Ewan.
Is it Mario Party?
<It's not. laughs> James.
What a whiff.
Is it Pokemon Stadium, Shannon?
It is Pokemon Stadium. Well done. I really forgot about the minigames in
that. The minigames for the best part.
Well, that's why I did that. Yeah. That's why,
that was also... This is also one of Taylor's favourite games, so I feel like...
Is it?
Is there a theme?
That's a theme.
Oh, so now James has got the inside track on the last one.
Why would you give it to the inside track?
I'm not saying anything. Yeah. The game is an action-adventure game developed by Ed Annunziata and
Jesus.
Novo Trade International. It was published
James.
By...
Oh, my God.
No, no, no.
This is almost insider Shannon, trading.
Why would you do this? You're just handing the points to James.
Oh, my God.
This is questionable.
James.
Is it Echo the Dolphin, Shannon?
It is Echo the Dolphin.
That's I'm submitting well, protest.
You got Britney's dance beat, so I feel like
and
you
apparently,
were in the box seat.
It seems like I was lucky to get it.
You were. Well, that was a great round. Suggested by James's sister, Taylor.
Let us know
who
what
we
you
never
think about that, everybody. That's kind of yes. fucked up.
Yeah.
Please, do
I
it.
I feel very hard done by
He didn't
did
confirm
you, did you
the theme.
Did you reach out to my sibling and
yeah,
ask
please,
them?
Please,
they were all...
Please
Britney's dance beat was the only hard one. The other two were very gettable by anyone. I will...
Echo the
I will
Dolphin.
Say.
Yeah, everyone loves Echo the Dolphin.
Maybe not Ewan, but Brady knows what Echo the Dolphin is.
Yeah, I wouldn't recognize it by the designer and
oh,
its fucking
my
publisher.
God. Let's move on.
No, I expect you to message Stacey Gibbons next week and ask her what Echo the Dolphin
is. Done.
I will reach out.
Oh, yes, thank you. You, please, yes.
Yeah.
And I will fucking anyway. Cream it next week. You watch this.
I love it.
With oh that, God, let's begin to what this week's episode of the Press Start Podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener or the podcast service of your choice and follow us at press.au on socials and visit the site at press.com.au. We've been joined today by Brody.
Thank you. You can follow me on most Fieman. Things.
Fieman.
What am I saying? Brody_DG. Just, yeah. Do your thing.
Taking home the points today in rather controversial circumstances. It was James.
Yeah. You can follow me on X at James, @JAMZ.
And it's just very questionable strategy in picking the games for What the Wiki. Handing points to the winner. It was Shannon.
Thank you. Look, I didn't really think of it, but I wouldn't want to give James a bigger lead, so apologies to all. You can follow me at Shannon Crixty on the socials.
And I've been your host, Ewan. You can follow me on socials at Ewan_Roxburgh. Thanks again for tuning in, and until next time, happy gaming.
Bye.
Brody, just looking how I feel right now.
I'm going to have a lovely night. I'm going to get Britney's dance beat on Delta, allegedly.